welcome to KZIW, Curry Coast Community Radio. This is Ewing's Doings Half Hour. I'm Angela Ewing, and I'm happy to introduce two writers in today's broadcast who are involved in poetry and prose, and that is a delightful part of a writer's world. It seems inevitable as writers, we evolve writing poems about the things we love. Georgia Cockerham has written poetry most of her life and upon retiring in 2010 took up watercolour painting. She finds comfort in her art and, following a personal tragedy several years ago, has found it contributes to her long-term healing. Georgia raised two sons and has three grandchildren to whom she dedicated her published children's book of poetry about animals on the Northwest Coast. So, Georgia, you've always been a creative person, I believe, with your years in dance and costume design, now a writer of children's poetry and an illustrator. Tell us how that transition took place.
Well, in part, many of the dance routines that I taught very young children included a song with the dance. And the songs, the words to the songs generally rhymed. Mm-hmm. So it probably had a lot of purpose and inspiration in my poetry, in that I found that I enjoyed writing for children. And although in the last few years I've written poetry for adults as well, I always enjoy writing a good children's poem.
So children really are your love.
They're a tremendous joy to me.
Right,
yes.
Right.
Yes.
So I always wonder when people sit and write, as I do, what's your writing environment like? Like, are you inspired to write by certain scenes, places, people, or situations? What's your writing routine? Do you have one?
I seem to be inspired by many different things. It just depends on when the inspiration will hit me, and it might be a scene, it might be something that I see someone doing while walking down the street, mm-hmm. It might be something one of my grandchildren has said to me.
Right.
When I was in college, I read Rod McEwen and
right.
was very very taken with his writing. And then when I had small children, I read them nursery rhymes all of the time. And most recently, I suppose, someone who I've really come to enjoy is Homer and writing his poetry.
Oh, right, right.
So a very eclectic...
Sounds like it.
...group of poems.
Yes.
And
I really would like to hear you read a poem that you've written.
Okay.
Is that all right?
Sure. If it's okay, I'll read one from the book.
Lovely.
The children's book, Wildlife Friends, Northwest Coast.
And while we're talking about that book, it is published, and
yes.
you've been doing very well with sales, I understand.
Yes, I've been marketing it myself, and marketing it when traveling, so that I will stop by if I see a shop that I feel might be a good fit for my book, I'll stop. And so it's now being sold in a number of locations in Washington State, Oregon, and California.
That's great. That's really wonderful to hear.
Thank you.
I feel
fortunate.
You're doing your own publicity, which is what we have to do these days, isn't it?
I find it to be very helpful.
Right, right.
Yes.
All right.
Well, this poem is called The Harbor Seal, and what inspired me to write this poem was a little harbor seal pup that had been left on the beach down below where my husband and I live, below our house, and watching the pup and then going on the internet and researching the harbor seals and understanding what would happen to the pup if we left it there.
Mm.
And so I ended up writing a poem about him so as to educate children.
That's
on the
good.
Harbor seals.
Lovely.
The harbor seal starts out a pup. His face is cute and round. With big black eyes and whiskers, he makes a soft ma sound. We saw his mama leave him on the shore to stay a while as she swam off to eat enough for her and hungry child. Later, as the sun went down, the tide came in again and she came for her pup that she'd left upon the sand. Now he lives within the ocean where he swims around a lot and when he wants to warm up hauls himself upon a rock. On the rocks, the seal pups lie above kelp, rich and thick. They seem to live in harmony within their coastal clique.
Oh, lovely. And you do the illustrations as well. So you've got a picture of a little seal in there, I suspect.
Yes, I do. It's a picture of several with the one in the forefront, the one that reminds me of the little pup that we found on the beach.
So when you write the poem, then you do your watercolor after that. Is that right? How does that evolve? I mean, do you think of... I wouldn't be able to paint an animal or draw an animal. I could write about it, but I couldn't draw it. That's a gift you have as well.
Well, thank you. I've been drawing and painting now for a number of years. And actually, in general, I've been painting the animal first and then writing about it.
I see.
But the animal, something about the animal puts in me a feeling of just thinking this would be a fun animal to paint, and right. I think I could make a cute poem out of it for children.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Thank you.
Now, also, because you're a busy lady, you mentioned to me once that you're involved with a group called the Compassionate Friends, Inc. Would you share a little bit of that with us?
Angela, thank you for asking me about the Compassionate Friends. This is a national organization for those who have suffered the death of their son, daughter, grandchild, brother, or sister. And my husband and I formed one of over 660 chapters in this country and formed that chapter in 2004 in Brookings. And I have overseen the chapter since then.
Wow. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
Absolutely fantastic. How do people get to know about that?
We try to get the word out in a number of ways. Radio, certainly. And we also have a few events during the year and try to spread the word that way. But we also have a board of individuals who are key figures here within the communities we serve. These individuals are, though not bereaved, or at least having not lost children or grandchildren, they are individuals through whom either their vocation, avocation, their job, somehow they meet with bereaved individuals who have recently lost someone. And if the individual who has died was the daughter, son, grandchild, brother, or sister of the bereaved person here in the area, then this board member will tell them about the fact that we have an organization here for someone like them to attend. And they will come then to a meeting and meet others who have also suffered tragedy such as theirs.
Aye, that must be very comforting for people, I would think.
It helps tremendously to take one out of the isolation that often comes just through society not understanding the type of grief that accompanies the loss of a son, daughter, or grandchild.
Right.
And with the Compassionate Friends meetings, which happen every month, they are able to sit with those who understand.
That's marvelous, marvelous.
Thank you
on behalf of all those people. That's a great, great organization.
Thank you. I feel very privileged to be able to help others who have suffered such tragedies. And through my help with them, they helped me to heal after the loss of my youngest son, which is how I became familiar with the Compassionate Friends.
Oh, goodness. I think you've got a novel there of your life.
Yes.
Don't you think?
Yes.
Well, it's been most delightful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
For talking to us about your poetry and your book. Good luck with that.
Thank you for asking and giving me this opportunity.
That was really wonderful. Thank you. And now I'm going to ask Carl some questions. This is Carl Sandstrom. Carl, how nice to see you. I've known you for some time as a lyricist for songs and love poems. When we've been to our good friend Gil Cook, and he's told me all sorts of wonderful things about your writing. So I was wondering, how did you begin to write in that genre?
Well, thank you, Angela. I really didn't begin to write in that genre. I began as trying to write a memoir for myself. When I first moved to Brookings, I joined a class that was writing memoirs. And from there, I started to write a little bit of poetry, taking ideas from nature or a particular person or something like that. And one night I was down there talking to Gil after he was playing his songs, and I got the idea that maybe I could write a love song for him. So that's where it came from.
Mm-hmm. And I know your work is good. We always say, that's Carl's work, and Gil's put the music to it. Mm. It's very exciting.
Yes, he's a very talented musician.
He really is. Yeah. So you are also writing a children's book with a talking cat and dog, and I have read your stories. And it seems to me that there's always a moral to them, right? Or you talk about the season, or you give a lesson in the storyline. Am I picking up on that correctly?
You probably are. I try to write something of interest to people, and I would think a child would need to learn a little bit of a lesson in life, and that's probably why there is a little small moral in some of them.
Yes.
I started writing those after it was another class I was taking here in Brookings, and we would prompt each other week by week, and we would give ourselves an idea, let's write something about a computer, or let's write something about the weather, or a famous person. And then one day I just decided, I think I'll use characters to explain what I felt should be known about things. And then I brought in, everybody loves dogs and cats, so I brought up a dog and a cat to talk back and forth to each other in order to present the idea that I wanted to put across.
Yes, yeah. And I love your stories. So what would you like to share with us today? Would it be one of your songs?
I think it would be nice if we just promoted one of the songs that Gil has written,
right,
or music that he's written to.
Right.
Yeah, one of the first ones. This is called A Woman from Brookings Harbor. She was the summer sunshine mixed with a little rain. She held the mountain flowers and played among the waves. She was a woman of Brookings Harbor, a diamond in the sun, too pretty to be left alone, too precious to be found. She waved as the mist curled her hair. She took the waves over the rocks, a woman against the sea. She was a woman of Brookings Harbor, where I had come in May, casting nets of my love, drifting along the bay. We gathered shells and strolled the shore as the sunset warmed each wave. We talked of dreams and quiet gardens and of games we hadn't played. She was a woman of Brookings Harbor, a diamond in the sun, too pretty to be left alone, too precious to be found. She was the woman of Brookings Harbor, where I had come in May, casting nets of my love, drifting along the bay, never dreaming that I'd be caught in the wake of a shy old moon, with only the waves to remember, a woman taken by the sea.
Lovely. I really like that. And I think I've heard it with Gil, and I think I've sung along to that one.
Good.
Very nice.
Yeah, very nice.
So when you are inspired by the sea, which you are, obviously, mm-hmm, I've noticed you take a piece of paper out and you scribble. You're writing at that moment, so your inspiration comes from wherever you are, almost, right? If you're sitting looking at something, a sunset or a sunrise, and then the ocean, is that when you actually find your inspiration to write, or does it just come to you in the morning?
I think when I'm in a more relaxed situation, that someone else's words or way they look or something happens in the environment, then yes, I try to write a feeling about that. Uh-huh. Usually it doesn't turn out really well, but over time you can just keep developing it, and eventually you have a small poem.
Yes, yes. And so your children's stories and the poems that you write, the poems as well for the stories, don't you?
Not as much. There are some smaller ones. I've written Mr. Uchi's Monkey's Alphabet, which goes with along with them, and a few other things.
Can you repeat that?
No, it's too long, but it's, you know, it covers the whole alphabet.
Right, so. Right. Wow, that's great. That's great. So just because I'm curious about your church association, you seem to be doing a lot for churches around the area. You're always, oh, it's Carl who does that, or I hear, or ask Carl to do that. You're a help to a lot of people around the area. What prompted that?
Well, it started with an idea that I could help with the homeless in this community, and I wanted to participate in that area. At that time, St. Timothy's was trying to develop a free clinic, and they needed help constructing a room for an examination room. And I have a mentor named Barbara, who's also involved in Habitat for Humanity. So it kind of fit together that she always has tasks and small ideas that she wants to accomplish, and I can go in there and be the person to drive the nail, I guess.
Yes, yes. Excellent. Thank you for all your good work, Carl.
Mm-hmm. It's wonderful. Fun, and, you know, it's one of those things that I was kind of taught that you need to do one good thing each day.
That's lovely. Very good. Well, I think we've come to the end of our interviews, and I thank you both very much. Thank you, Carl. Thank you, Georgia. Very, very interesting people, and I hope to hear more from you, and hopefully I can see some of your things published. Thanks again.
You're welcome.
This is Angela Ewing signing off. Good night. Thank you for listening to Curry Coast Community Radio, your community-supported radio station. If you like this program and want to hear more like it, consider supporting Curry Coast Community Radio by volunteering your time or contributing to our capital campaign to help us get on the air. For more information, go to our website, kciw.org.